And we're holding by the Mishneh Yedaled Amud Aleph. Continuing on things of Yom Tov, whether you allow what you're allowed to do and what you're not allowed to do. Beshama says that spices, if you need to grind them on Yom Tov, you're allowed to grind them using a wooden using a wooden mortar. The usual way to grind most spices in those days, maybe even nowadays, I don't know, is you put them in a mortar, a container that has a hollow. Then you take a pestle, a heavy stick or something like that, a heavy pounder, and you pound on them. So Beshamai says that you can do that in a wooden one. There seem to be two different sources in what Rashi says on this. Is it that you don't need a shinui, you can do it kedarkei, or is it that it's a slight shinui? Because normally you might do them in a stone one. So the expression we have in front of us in Rashi is shemakin by kedarkei, the ein sodik shinui. It doesn't require a shinui, but there's a different girsa that you find that some of the mafoshim have in Rashi, that ela shinui zuta, that all you need is a small change, namely from, I guess, usually you would use a stone one, and here you're using a wooden one instead of morning out. Vamelach, on the other hand, salt, that Shammai is going to say you need a big shinui. So if we say that spices, you need only a small shinui, then salt, you need a big one. And if you say that spices, you can do kadarkan, then salt, either way, the point is they're saying salt, you need a big shinui. Vamelach, bapach, v'etzapor. Salt, if you want to grind it on Yom Tov, you need to put it in an earthenware pitcher, that's a pach, and then you take a wooden spoon and you bang on it with that, which would be a big shinui. Tosfos discusses over here and it's brought in Shulchan Aruch. We're not necessarily talking about, let's say you had salt, like the regular table salt that we have that clumped up, and now you need to pound on it to break it apart. We're talking about where to begin with, the salt comes in larger chunks and you're breaking it down. Let's say, for example, you bought kosher salt and you want to make it into regular salt, or even you bought rock salt, and I don't know if that stuff is edible, but whatever, you know what I mean. The point is we're not talking about where it clumped back together. It does some of the posts can do say even in that case maybe you should still do some kind of shinui if nothing else because of modest iron, because people may not realize. I don't know if nowadays that would apply because nobody buys blocks of salt like that. Anyway, that's Bishamai. Beshilul says spices you can grind normally using a stone. You're using a stone mortar. You don't need a shinui at all for reasons that we're going to say in the Gemara. Salt, they agree, you need some kind of shinui, but it doesn't have to be as major as what you're talking about. That Shammai putting it in a jug and using a wooden spoon. You can use a mortar. It just has to be a wooden one instead of a stone. Okay, so the Gemara says, "Dekulei alma mias melach boi shinu." Now, both Beshamai and Beshilul are agreeing, that salt requires shinu. My timer. So, what's different about salt that you should need a shinu for it? Rav Huna and Rav Chista. Rav Huna and Rav Chista argue on the reason. Chad alma kolak deres kulon tzriches melach. One says because all pots that you're cooking food are going to require salt. The ain kolak deres tzriches tavlin, not all of them need spices. So in other words, you're going to need salt. So you should have prepared salt before Yom Tov. You don't know for sure. Not everybody plans in advance what they're going to eat on Yom Tov. You may decide on the spot that you want to eat a certain thing, and then you realize it needs such and such spices. V'chadama, the other one gives a different reason. Kolak tavlin mefigin taimon or melach ain mefiga taimon. The difference is that spices, if you grind them the day before, they lose their potency. Salt doesn't. Salt is inorganic. You can grind it long before, and it will still be the same thing. So the question is, my binayu, what's the practical difference between these two reasons? The answer is, ikka binayu di yada maik deira boil of ashurin. One possibility is, what if he does know before Yom Tov what he plans to cook? He made himself a menu. He made a menu before Yom Tov. So according to the first lashon, then spices would be just like salt. You're going to need a shinui. And according to the second lashon, you won't. Inami b'murika. Another possibility is, what if the spice is not something that you're putting in for the flavor, just for the color? Murica in English is called saffron. You put it in food just for the color. It gives it like a yellow color. They use it in Indian cooking, whatever. So there you'd have the other way around. If you take the view that, if you look at it from the point of view of you didn't know yesterday, so with calcum, it wouldn't necessarily, so calcum, then it wouldn't really matter. If you talk about, if you talk about that it's going to lose its potency, calcum is not going to lose its potency. You put it in for the color anyway, it doesn't have a flavor. So therefore, you could have just, according to the second explanation, you could have just as well done it before. Whereas according to the first explanation, you still have to see, well, did he know beforehand what he was planning to make or not? The Rishonim argue, given that we have these two reasons, what do we do? Can we be makel according to both reasons, or do we have to be machmer according to both reasons? In other words, would we say that in order to grind spices normally on Yom Tov, you have to have both factors? You have to have that you didn't know that you were going to prepare this dish yesterday, and that it's something that's going to lose its potency? Or can you be makel like both of them and say one or the other? So in Shulchan Aruch it brings both possibilities, and it says it's better if possible to be machmir. So generally speaking, you should plan to grind your spices erev Yom Tov. The Al Tadeb actually brings an example that let's say, for example, you shouldn't grate chrein on Yom Tov you should do it with a shinui, especially because you usually make for a couple of days at a time, and they obviously you can't be making on Yom Tov for after Yom Tov. So that's what you do. So you do a shinui with most spices. Continues the Gemara. Omer of Yehuda Amar Shmuel, kol nidoichen kedarkan ba'afilu melach. Anything that needs to be ground or pounded on Yom Tov, you're allowed to do it the normal way, even salt, says Shmuel. What do you mean? We just said that salt requires a shinui according to both Bishamai and Bishilu. Oh, right. Tosfos, by the way, does mention, even if we say that you can be makel according to both of them, you can use mortars and pestles like we're talking about over here. But let's say, for example, pepper, you usually grind in a pepper mill. You usually have like those big pepper mills that sometimes have in fancy restaurants, and they grind the pepper by your table. That you wouldn't be allowed to use that pepper mill on Yom Tov, even though pepper is one of those spices that definitely loses its potency, and even you didn't know the day before you need it, because that would already be uvda d'chol. That would already, Tosfos says, that would already be doing things the normal weekday-ish way. So you can grind them in a mortar and pestle, and fine, according to Beis Hillel, you don't need a shinui, we said so far, and Shmuel also now is going to tell us that you don't need a shinui. But you can't use the pepper mill. The Achronim have a good deal of discussion. What about grinding coffee? Is coffee in that category of tavlin? On the one hand, it is going to lose its potency if you grind it the day before. On the other hand, you had more reason to know that you were going to need it yesterday. They're both saffron. So there is sometimes when the Gemara talks about calcum, it's not so clear whether it means saffron of safflower, which is a cheaper alternative. Saffron, it's a real saffron itself. It's possible. I mean, usually we equate them, but whatever the case, the point is they're there only for the color. Anyway, so Shmuel is telling us that everything can be ground normally, even salt. So what do you mean? The Mishnah, even both Bishama and Basil agreed, salt needs a shinu. So the answer is Huda Omer Ki Hai Tana. Shmuel is talking according to the following Tana. The Tanya, Omer Reb Meir. Reb Meir has a different version of the Machlokes Bishama Basil. Loy Nechlaku Bishama Basil Alani Doichin, Shani Doichin Kedarkon, Umelachim Mohen. Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel do not disagree about when you have other spices that you have other spices that need to be ground, that you can grind them normally or melachim mohen together with salt. The machlokes would be, so in other words, if you want to mix salt and spices in the mortar and grind them all together, says Reb Meir, Beis Shammai, both Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel would be fine with that. The machlokes says if you want to grind the salt by itself, and they say, So now, Beis Shammai says, if you want to grind salt by itself, again, from a block of salt, like we said, then, or coarse salt or whatever, so Beis Shammai says, first of all, you can only do it with a major shinui, like we said, with a pach and eitz aparer. And second of all, let's see, only the small amount that you would use for unroasted meat. Like we learned the other day, when you're roasting meat, so Rashi learns that you salt it, or Rashi learns that you have to salt it a little bit. Many other Rishonim learn you don't have to salt it at all, but practically speaking, as Tosfos says, you usually would in order to give it a flavor, which we learned about that on Shabbos. So that small amount of salt, and when we say salt, when we say small, the pashas, we mean relatively speaking. If you're doing a larger amount of meat, you're going to need a larger amount of salt. But proportional to the amount of food you're cooking, it's a small amount. But not the amount of salt that you would need to flavor a whole pot of food, says Beis Shammai. That you can't do on Yom Tov, even with a shinri, according to the Meir's version. Or Beis Hillel says you can use anything to grind it. So you ask, what do you mean anything? Does that mean you can even use mukta utensils to grind it? You're right. Beis Hillel doesn't mean bichol davar with anything. They mean lichol davar for anything. Even the amount, even where the purpose of it is to put in a pot of food, and therefore you're grinding a lot. Now Rashi and Tosfos both add that still, okay, that still doesn't tell us in so many words that it means that you can't, that you don't need a shinui. However, since we're saying that's when we say al man nechlaku, when a mayor is saying loy nechlaku on something such al man nechlaku, it must mean that we're saying that they're only arguing about one particular thing, namely what we're mentioning about how much salt you can make. They're not arguing. In other words, the argument would be, what about kedarka? If you want to grind salt by itself, so the Beis Shammai is going to say, we're machmir in two ways. Number one, you can't do it kedarka at all. And number two, you have to do only a small amount. And Beis Hillel is going to be saying that you can do it l'chol davar, for any purpose, and kedarka. So Rashi explains, in other words, that this is how it is. Whenever you have an alman nechluku like that, when you have loy nechluku on such and such, alman nechluku, the alman nechluku has to be similar to the loy nechluku. Since in the first part about the spices, he mentioned shenidochen kedarkan, therefore in the sefer, when he's talking about salt, it implies that Beis Hillel is allowing a kedarkan. Since the detail about, maybe if you wanted to compare it to, I guess you could say it's more like a hekesh almost. Once he already specified in the resha that he's talking about kedarkan, then the sefer also, we have to understand that he means kedarkan. So therefore, Shmuel can learn from that according to Beis Hillel, you would in fact be allowed to grind salt normally, not like it says in our Mishnah, that Beis Hillel would require a slight shinui of doing it in a wooden mortar instead of a stone one. On the other hand, continues the Gemara, Amalei Rav Acha Bardla Lebrei, Rav Acha Bardla says to his son, Ki Daiches Etzli, when you are grinding salt in my house, Atzluye Veduch, don't do it with the mortar sitting on its bottom as it usually would, tilt it on its side and then do the grinding. That way it'll be, so he holds like Shmuel that you can do it the modder shel Eben, unlike the version, he holds like Shmuel's version of the Machloikis, which we said it as Meir's version, that salt doesn't require a shinui at all, unlike what it said in the Mishnah, but he holds at least a slight shinui you should do. So it doesn't have to be using a different kind of mortar, wood instead of stone, but it does mean that you should tilt the mortar on its side and then do it. Interesting side point, by the way. Davening in Aramaic is called sloisa. We say tiskabot sloisin of usin, for example. So there's a couple of places, for example, there's a place in Lakuta Torah and Chukas, and there's other places as well where it talks about why, what's the word soli, the shodesh over here, means to tilt or to incline. Like, for example, when it says loisata mishpat avyoncha, don't incline the justice away from where it should be, then Targum translates loisats ledina. So the Alter Rebbe explains that the same way davening is called sloisa, in the sense you want to incline but the Alter Rebbe is focusing more on what you're accomplishing with Maila, that you want to incline the Ur and Sof to go into Keser and then from there to come down, and then from there to come down into the Olamus. The Gemara tells Rav Sheshes Shoma Kol Buchna. One time, Rav Sheshes heard a sound of somebody pounding salt in a mortar. Omar, so he says, Hai lav migave de besoihu. I'm sure that this is not coming from inside my house because I told them that if they're going to grind salt, they need to do it with the shino. You're tilting the mortar, and this doesn't sound like that. Rav Sheshes, he was taka blind, maybe taka for that reason, yeah. He had a sharper sense of hearing, as is often the case. Yeah. Anyway, so the question is, so in other words, he's not saying it's also, remember, this is a chumrah that Rav Acha Bardla and Rav Sheshes were saying for their families. L'maisa, that chumrah is accepted in halacha, and that's how it's brought in Shulchan Aruch, but in other words, he couldn't say that anybody who's doing not like that is being over al direi chachamim, since after all, Shmuel said, based on Rav Meir, that you don't need a shinui at all. But anyway, so the question is, how does Rav Sheshes know for a fact that this is not in his house? The Duma Atzluye Atzli, maybe in fact they're doing it with the mortar tilted. That's the answer. It's the Shami David Solo Kole. He heard the sound was very clear. If it was on its side, it would be a duller sound. Maybe because you can't do it as hard, maybe because it doesn't strike the bottom as well, whatever. It said, when you hear a ringing sound like that, then you know it's hitting the bottom. Okay, the Dilma Tavlin Habu, how does he know that they're grinding salt? Maybe they're grinding spices, and spices, we said for sure, is allowed without a shinui. Because we said, for the two reasons, either because spices are volatile and they're going to lose their flavor, or because you... No. The point is that since spices, you couldn't necessarily have done them before Yom Tov, either because you didn't know what you're cooking, or because it's going to lose its flavor. Therefore, the Chachamim did not impose on you, according to Bais Hillel, the need to do with any kind of shino. So this gets back, by the way, into the question that we've talked about a few times already, the Machlokas Rishonim. When we say that a certain malacha is also on Yom Tov, is it Doraisa, that Minatora, there's a distinction between things that could have been done before Yom Tov and not, or is it only Dirabbanan, that the Chachamim just don't want, that you're going to spend your whole Yom Tov doing all kinds of things that you could have equally well done before Yom Tov. But in any case, grinding spices, not in that category. So how does he know it's not grinding spices? The answer is tavlin navuchi menabach kalaydu. The answer is that when you're grinding spices, so you're breaking up the kernels over there of the spices. So therefore, it sounds like a growling sound, like a crackling or growling sound. That sounds different than the sound that you'd have when you're grinding salt, where it's a purer sound. So therefore, when he hears that purer sound, and it's also, you can tell it's hitting the bottom of the medrucha with force, then he knows they're grinding salt and they're doing it without a shinui. So therefore, he says, obviously, this is not from my household, otherwise they'd be doing it with a shinui. And if it was spices, then it would bechalal sound different. You'd hear that crackling sound. Does anyone talk about why he it doesn't seem to be negeta halacha how he knows, maybe, but on the other hand, since we have him saying, it could be also the Gemara wants to stress this point that after all, this is only a chumrah. This is not something that's required me'ikra din based on what Shmuel is saying. So therefore, in other words, he's not saying the people who are doing this are being over al direi chachamim. He's just saying, I can be sure it's not in my house. And once you're saying that, then we need to clarify how taka does he know. Turn up on him. We learn in a braisa, ein oisin tisni. You're not allowed to make tisni on Yom Tov. Tisni is that you take grains of wheat and you pound them so that they break. Each grain breaks into four. So we learned about the other day when we learned about the eli, that was a keli, we said, a heavy wooden keli that they used for this purpose to pound wheat into pieces like that. Well, so there's different kinds, actually. There's chilka, which is a coarser one, where they divide each one into two. There's targis, where they divide each one into three. There's tisni, four. And then you have finer and finer ones. The purpose of all of it, by the way, is they would make out of it, something similar to farfel. The Gemara in some places calls it mais gdero, or Gemara over here is going to call it daisa. So they kind of like, well, in modern Hebrew, actually, they use the word daisa for cereal. That's where they get it from these Gemaras. But that's the idea. In other words, they would use it as whatever they do with it afterwards. In pastures, they'd cook it, and it would be like a kind of coarse oatmeal So you're not allowed to make that on Yom Tov. The pastures, we would assume the reason is because it's a big tircha. The ain koishin machteshes. And continues the Braisa, you're not allowed to pound using, you're not allowed to pound the grain using a mortar. So the Gemara asks, Tarti. So you have two statements that seem to contradict each other. Tisni is where each one is divided in four, implying that if you wanted to make it less finely ground, if you wanted to make chilkis or targis, which are two or three, then that would be fine. It's not such a tircha. Now we're saying that you can't use a machteshes at all, implying that you can't that you can't make it into any fractions. The answer is hokikama. What the Braisa means is matam. It's telling us one statement and giving a reason. Matam ein oisin tisni. Why can you not make tisni lefisha ein koshin machteshes? Because you're not allowed to use a machteshes at all. So therefore, it doesn't matter. In other words, so it doesn't matter how many now doesn't matter how many fractions what the size of the pieces is that you're breaking the grain into. Either way, the Braisa is telling us that you can't do it. You can't use a machteshes for wheat on for wheat or for grain or whatever on Yom Tov. Period. So the question is v'leima in koshin machtesh. So in other words, it has nothing to do with tirchan merubah. It's just you're not allowed to. The pashtus again, because it's something that you could have done before Yom Tov. It doesn't lose its flavor or whatever. Although we'll talk about that soon. But yeah. So the question is then v'leima in koshin machtesh. In that case, then why mention about the tisni at all? Just say you can't pound with a machtesh in general, and we'll understand that it means that no matter how small the pieces are. The answer is itoni en koshin machteshes habamina hanimila machteshes gdoila. If it only said machteshes, you would think what's the normal kind of mortar that you use for tisni is a large one. Like we were mentioning before the other day about the eli, which is a big, heavy wooden board. So normally you use a large one for that purpose. So you would think it means you can't use a large one. But abu machteshes katana ema shaper dummy. Maybe you would be allowed to make even tisni using a small one. Kamash Malan. Therefore, the Braisa is telling us that no, you're not allowed to make tisni at all because you can't use a machteshes. And since it starts by saying you can't make tisni, which means any kind, which means you can't make tisni. Period. The one in four at all. Then we understand sometimes that usually that's made in a machteshes gedola, in a large mortar. Sometimes it's done in a small one. But with the fact that the Braisa starts by saying you know it's in tisni implies you're completely not allowed to use any kind of machteshes. Big or small. So the question is, Tanya in koshin machteshes gdola, ava koshin machteshes katana. But another braisa says you could use a small one because a small one. So Rashi explains like this: a large one is usually used for grain and things like that. A small one is like the one in our Mishnah, where typically you use it for grinding spices. Maybe because with spices you don't need as much pressure in order to and as much force in order to break them up. Maybe because you only grind a small amount of spices at a time, as opposed to tisni, you make a larger amount. Whatever it is, so Braisa is saying that if you use a small one for wheat, then that's kilaachaya, that's a shinui, and therefore the second Braisa is saying it's mutter. So not like you're telling me that you're not allowed to in a big one or a small one. Now we have a braisa that tells us a big one taka not, but a small one is fine. So we're back to the question, why did the first braisa say you can't make tisni at all, but if you say you can't use a machteshes, we'll understand it means a large machteshes, and whereas a small one is mutter because it's a shinu. And the answer is, Omer Abai, kitani nami machtesh masnisa machteshes gdola tanya. As a matter of fact, yeah, so let's go back on what we said before. In fact, usually the expression in the Gemara ought to be Ela Amar Abaya, really, because Abaya is fixing up what we said. We're going back to what we said before. So Abaya says, you're right. As a matter of fact, the first Braisa is talking only a Machteshes Gdola. So in fact, the Braisa is, we were wondering why the Braisa tells us two statements that seem to contradict each other. One that you can't make tisni at all, and the other one, and the other one implying that you could make other fractions that which is not such a tircha, and then it says in koshin klal. So we tried to say that it means that you can't, that the braisa is telling us you can't use a big one or a small one. Abaya says no. As a matter of fact, the braisa is telling us two dinim, and it's saying like this: you can't make tisni at all because that requires a lot of tircha. So that you can't make with a big one or a small one. Then you have, when it comes to other kinds of things you might use a machteshes for other divisions of grain, for example, well, not for spices, we're talking about for grain over here. for grain over here, where you're making, for example, daisa, which is not as finely ground, this tear is not as finely pounded as tisni, so that the braisa is telling us that you can't use a machteshes, and we understand that the regular kind of machteshes used for that purpose is a large one. So therefore, a small one for that, for a small one for that would be fine. So tisni, not at all, and other kinds like chilke and targis, which are divided into only two or three, those you have to use a machteshes katana, because that's kalachayat. That's one answer. Rava Amar, like Kasha, Rava gives a different answer to reconcile the two braises, like Kasha, Holon, Vaholahu. As a matter of fact, the first braise is saying one din, like we said before. You're not allowed to make tisni or any other, you're not allowed to make tisni or any other fraction because you can't use machteshes. So what about the second braise is saying a big one or a small one? The difference is, Holon, Vaholahu. One braisa is talking for us in Babel, and the other one for them in Eretz Yisrael. So what's the difference? There's a few reasons. Rashi says the difference is, we in Babel are poor. B'chlau, you find in a number of places in the Gemara that many people in Babel were poor. Later on, actually, in the Gemara, we're going to have a something about it in Daf Lamed Beis. We're going to have something about the rich people in Babel and some things. There's some harsh things the Gemara has to say about them because they weren't Balei Tzedakah. Yeah, but in Mechuza particularly, but yeah. But in most of Babel, people were poor. So they didn't have avodim. So therefore, now avodim tend to be careless with these kinds of things. They try to exploit loopholes. You tell them you can use a small one, they're going to go and use a large one, and we ask them afterwards, they'll say, yeah, but we use a small one. So in Babel, says Rabbah, we don't have anything to worry about that. Therefore, we can go ahead and use a small one, and we have no problem that anybody's using loopholes. Whereas Lahu, for them in Eretz Yisrael, they have a vadim, so they're gonna try to play games over here. They're gonna use a big one, which we're saying is aser, and they're gonna claim that we use a small one. That's one explanation. The Rambam gives a different explanation. He says the grain in Eretz Yisrael was very good quality. Therefore, in Eretz Yisrael, you could have done it the day before, and it wouldn't lose any of its flavor. So if you're gonna do it on Yom Tov, then you have to do it with a shinui. Whereas in Babel, their grain is lesser, is of lower quality, so therefore you're allowed to do it today. The Ravid disagrees with that, and the Ravid brings another reason. Later on, at the beginning of the next parak, we're going to learn that in Babel, they ate a lot of daisa. It was one of their main staple foods. In fact, we're going to have in the Gemara over there, where they're da'achli nama b'nama. They used to eat bread. That was the mainstay of their meal in Babel, like everywhere else. And together with it, they would eat daisa as like a side dish. And the Gemara like makes fun of them. They're eating nama b'nama. They're eating bread with a side of bread, because that's effectively what daisa is. It's wheat. It's wheat just made in a different form. So the point is, therefore, in Babel, they make a lot of daisa and they eat. It's one of their staple foods. Therefore, we're going to allow them to do it. With a shinui on Yom Tov, namely in a machteshes katana. Whereas in Eretz Yisrael, they don't eat so much daisa anyhow. Therefore, they shouldn't be doing it in gdola or katana. The Radvaz brings in one of his trubas a different thing. He says in Babel, similar to what the Ravid is saying, because they ate so much daisa, they used to make it like in large industrial quantity. So therefore, so if instead of taking it to the guy who has a giant machteshes and making a huge amount of it at a time, you make a small amount in your house, fine, that's enough of a shinui. Whereas in Eretz Yisrael, you don't really have that. Okay. So the Gemara tells, Rav Papi, Ikla LeBei Mar Shmuel, Rav Papi one time visited the house of Mar Shmuel. The Pashas Mar Shmuel over here is not Shmuel the Amora, just somebody else. Anyway, I see like daisa. Mar Shmuel brought Rav Papi some daisa, some of this crushed grain like that. V'loy ochel, and he didn't want to eat from them. So because he figured that they had made it illegally on Yom Tov and Machteshes Gedolah.
The implementation is bubble or if so.
Rav Papi and Mar Shmuel are in bubble. But yeah. So the question is, v'dumu Machteshes Katana Abdua. What's Rav Papi's problem? Maybe they made it in a Machteshes Katana, and we just said in Babel, that's fine. The answer is the chazir to have a daik tfei. He saw it was very well pounded. That's not the kind of thing you can accomplish in a machteshes katana. Necessarily, it means they used a big one. Okay, the dumam esmal abdua. How did he know they didn't make it before Yom Tov? And the answer is the chazir to have a kolif tzorei. He saw that the color of it was very white and clear, showing that it looked like it had just been freshly done. Yeah. The Iboyus Ema, or another possibility, maybe not necessarily even, maybe it didn't look quite so white and clear, and maybe it wasn't pounded so finely, but shiny. Mao Shmuel had slaves, and as we just said, they were careless, and they were going to do things in the wrong way, and then claim we did them the right way. So therefore, according to that, Rav Papi suspected that they may have done that to make things easier for themselves, and therefore he didn't want to eat from it. So that this bears out Rashi's trap, right? But even according to the other pshatim, we're not necessarily saying that wouldn't be a factor as well. But yeah, this itself, that was a chumrah of his. It's not necessarily required off yalocha because even I'm a vashal b'shabbos b'mezid, another person is sometimes allowed to eat it, and that's even when you're talking malachas daraisa. Sometimes they only have to wait until right after Shabbos. Sometimes they're even allowed to eat it on Shabbos. So over here we're talking sachakol a gzeira d'rabbanon. So therefore, that he didn't want to eat it as a chumrah. Well, we don't have a lot in this, is true. Yeah. Everything's got pre made. Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
It doesn't lose its
true. Yeah, that's true.
So if you chemicals,
it's true. Okay. Mishnah says, Habur kitnius b'yomtiv. If a person is eating beans on yomtiv, and he wants to pick out, you have the beans come with shells and dirt and whatever, and he wants to get that out. He's allowed to pick out the food and eat it right away. In other words, so he's not allowed to pick out the psoilus, and he's only allowed to pick out a small amount at a time, not a small amount, but whatever, what he's going to be eating right there on the spot. Vesilo says he can do Breda the normal way. He can even do it in his lap, where he collects a large amount of it in his lap in a fold of his clothing or whatever. He can even use for that purpose a konin or a tamchoy. We learned about those the other day. A konin is a kind of basket made into a funnel where you put the kidneys with all the mixture of stuff in them, and you shake it, and the psoilus for the beans fall out the bottom, and the psoilus stays stuck inside the cup. A tamchoy is a large plate. Often a tamchoy actually is a large serving dish that has compartments in it where you put the mixture in there and you shake it, and the beans go in one direction because they're heavier and rounder, and the psoilus goes in the other direction because it's lighter.
What tamchoy do they use, like, for?
So the word tamchoy that they use, so in the Gemara, you have, for example, there's the kupa and the tamchoy. There's the kupa sadaka that you collect money for the anim, and then you have tamchoy. It's exactly the same thing. It's tamchoy, same word, yeah, it's because they would collect food from the balabatim, and then they would put it in this kind of serving tray with different compartments, and then they'd give it out to the anim, yeah. So Basil says you're allowed to do that. The Alter Rebbe actually talks about in Shulchan Aruch, he has a long discussion over there, a long kuntra saccharin, where he brings the Taz wants to say that even fine, you're allowed to do that, but you're not allowed to do, even according to this Hillel, you wouldn't be allowed to do very much at a time. Just whatever you're going to eat at that immediate meal. And the Alter Rebbe discusses at some length over there and says, lav davka, like what the Taz is saying. In fact, you'd even be allowed to do a larger amount. Basil says you're allowed to do it, but they don't say how much you can do. The canon of a tamper doesn't mean how much you're doing. So the Taz learns in it that means you still only can do that, that they would still agree that you can only do a small amount at a time, but the Alter Rebbe says no. But you can't use for that purpose a board, because on that you usually make a very large quantity at a time. So that already looks like you're doing it for after Yom Tov. So it's one thing we just talked about, doing a large quantity where you're going to eat some of it now and some of it by the next Yom Tov meal, but not where you're doing it in a way where it looks like you're preparing it for weekdays as well. And not using a sieve or a sifter, again, because those you make larger amounts at a time. Rav Gamliel says another possibility is you take the beans and you put them in a bucket, and then you pour water over it, and the psoilus floats to the top, and then the shola, and then you can skim it off. So Rav Gamliel, there's different girsois over here. There's a girsa that doesn't have the word af, which means that Rav Gamliel is saying you shouldn't be doing butter the regular way. Instead, do it this easier way by pouring water over it and then skimming off the psoilus.
You take off the bad from the good, then, huh?
That's the thing we just said. Basil says butter kadarka, which means you can be butter the normal way, which means taking psoilus out of oichel. That's fine. On Shabbos, that would be osur. But on Yom Tov, we're saying that's mutter. So there is a girsa that doesn't have the word af in what Rabbi Gamliel says, which therefore means that he's saying that that's what you should do instead of using a konrin, etc. However, the girsa we have in front of us is af, which means he says you can do either one. You can do konrin or tamchoy if you want, or if you prefer, you can do mediach b'shoyla. The halach is not like Rabbi Gamliel anyway, though, so you're not allowed to do that. Okay. So the Gemara says, Tanya, Omer Rabbi Gamliel, Bamed Varam Amurim, when are we talking about that this hill is allowing you to take out the psoilus? Sha'oichu meruba al psoilus. Only if you have more food than psoilus. So for example, let's say you're eating these beans and you have a little bit of straw or a little bit of dirt mixed in them, then you're allowed to take out that little amount of psoilus. Have a psoilus meruba al oichel, but if you have more psoilus than oichel, divrei hakol, noitel as oichel, maniach as psoilus, then both Bishama and Bishil are going to agree that you have to take out the food and leave the psoilus. What do you mean? If you have psoilus meruba al oichel, how are you even allowed to move it? The food should be bottled to the psoilus and the whole thing should be moved. The answer is loy tzricha, the nafish betircha bezuter b'shiura. Let's say the amount of the actual volume of the psoilus is small, but the tircha is bigger. Let's say, for example, you have a small, little pieces of dirt or shell or whatever mixed in over there. So what Rabbi Gamliel is saying is, we're not talking about the actual volume of oichel versus psoilus. You're right, if the volume of psoilus was more than the volume of oichel, then the whole thing would be mukta. What we mean is, if the tircha of taking out the oichel is greater than the tircha of taking out the psoilus, then Basil says, do the lesser tircha and take out the psoilus. But if the tircha of the psoilus is greater, because, in other words, it's a bunch of small pieces, then take out the oichel and leave the psoilus behind. So either way, in other words, do it in a way that reduces the amount of tircha. Yeah. Okay. We said Rav Gamliel lema af mediach b'shoyla. Rav Gamliel says you're also allowed to pour water over it and then skim off the garbage that floats to the top. So Tanya, we learn a brayse. Amar Rav Elazar ben Tzadik, kach hayim in hagen shal beis Rav Gamliel. In fact, that's how the household of Rav Gamliel used to do things. Shahayim mevin dli mala yadoshim. They would bring a pail full of lentils. They pour water over it until it overflows. And then the food, the lentils sink to the bottom, and the psoilus floats to the top, and then they could skim it all. So the Gemara asks about Tanya Ibcha, what do you mean that was the way it worked? Did we actually learn in a braisa the other way around? The psoilus sank to the bottom. The answer is like Kasha Hoba Afra Hoba Gili. Depends what kind of psoilus we're talking about. There's dirt versus there's straw. So in other words, when they did that, the dirt would sink all the way to the bottom. The lentils wouldn't sink quite to the bottom, but they'd be further down. And then the straw, another white thing, would float to the top. Either way, so sort of a laws of Reb Tzadik is saying that's what they did in Rav Gamliel's household, although again, the halacha is not like that, and you're not able to do that. Okay.
If the dirt goes down and the holes are too small for the thing, that's much quicker, much easier, less tircha than...
It is less tircha, but nevertheless, that's more, that's too much of a regular way of burr. So even the konon or tampoy are also normal ways of burr, but still not to that extent. It looks more like uvdin d'chur, it's more like a weekday-ish way of doing things. Okay. Mishnah says, this shamer omrim ein meshalchen v'yomtev ela monos. On Yom Tov, you want to send a present to somebody, you can only send them monos. Now, monos are like we have shalach monos. It means ready to eat food. So, Bishama is only allowing you to send ready. There is bechlal. There is bechlal. Sending a gift to somebody on Yom Tov is not so simple. It talks about Shulchan Aruch because you have issues of kinyan. You're being makneh something to him. However, where it's tzorech Yom Tov, then you're allowed to. So over here, this Shammai holds, if it's ready to eat food, then that's Tzorech Yom Tov, therefore such a thing is going to be allowed. But not, for example, let's say you wouldn't, according to this Shammai, you wouldn't, let's say, be able to send a live animal where they can shecht it on Yom Tov. Vesilo says you're allowed to send domestic or wild animals or birds, ben chayim ben shchutin, whether alive or shechted, because you can shecht them on Yom Tov. Similarly, Meshalchen Yenis Shmonim Uslosis, you're allowed to send You're allowed to send wine or oil or fine flour, because all of those things are things that he can eat on Yom Tov. The kidneys, you're also allowed to send kidneys, because again, those you don't have to do anything further with. It's not like you have to grind them up or whatever. All you have to do is cook them, and cooking them you can do on Yom Tov. Avaloy tavua, but you're not allowed to send grain, because grain, what is he going to do with it on Yom Tov? You can't grind it. Because again, grinding is one of those malachas that you could have done before Yom Tov, and it wouldn't have lost any of its potency. So therefore, there's nothing you can do with grain. Therefore, you can't send it on Yom Tov. Reb Shimon matir b'tvua. Reb Shimon says you are allowed to send even raw tvua, because you could. Rashi explains you could grind them in a small machteshes, like we said before, and then you could cook them. Now, what about, didn't we say before that in Eretz Yisrael you're not allowed to grind even in a small machteshes? So there's an interesting thing that Slach brings. We find sometimes in the Gemara that because people would travel heavy girdle, Makom Torah, we often have that Chachamim of Eretz Yisrael had Talmidim from Babel and vice versa. So when Reb Shimon is saying you're allowed to grind, he may be talking about his Talmidim, the Bnei Babel. So that's one possibility. And then also, based on the different reasons that we said before, why there'd be a difference between Eretz Yisrael and Babel, you could conceivably have scenarios where those don't apply in Eretz Yisrael. With that said, that Slach argues that maybe the Gemara is going to mention a dish called Ludios that you could conceivably make out of this grain. That Slach wants to say maybe in fact Ludios are not ground up at all; they're just cooked whole. And in that case, there's no question, because then of course you're not using a machteshes anyhow. So Reb Shimon would allow that. So the Gemara says, Tony Rabbi Chiel, or the Pashas, then the Tanakama holds that you can't, because that's not very likely. The likelihood is that he's going to take the Tavua and grind it, and then that has no purpose on Yom Tov. So the Gemara says, Tony Rabbi Chiel, over Vad Shalo Yasenu B'Shura. Now, this that you're allowed to send a present with somebody is only if you don't send it with a Shura, with a line of people. When you have a line of people that are all carrying different parts, let's say you're sending the person a bunch of animals, and you have, like when Yaakov sends his present to Esau, and you have, Ado Levade, whatever, you have, three people, as I was going to say, Tana, Ein Shura, of course, and Shlosh Bnei Adam, you have at least three people carrying it, then it looks, so Rashi says, Absha Milsa, like it becomes very loud and noisy. It looks like they're about to go and sell it in the marketplace or something. It's not a covered for Yom Tov. The Ritva gives a different reason also. Three people, also because it looks like Mecha Chomemka, it looks like you have one buyer, one seller, and one go-between. So that's a reason to say no. Boy, Rav Ashi plus a Gadri or plus a Minimai. So Rav Ashi asked, what if you have the three people are not carrying all the same thing? What if each one is carrying something else? Now, you would have been allowed to send, let's say, one person carrying bread and another person carrying wine and another person carrying fruit, let's say. So now, even if you have all three of them together, it doesn't matter. Or maybe not, because the three of them are together. And the Gemara says, teku. Lemaisa, you have, so the poskim argue, what does that mean? Teku, and therefore we have to be machmer, or teku, and we have to be maple. The Altar of Britain, since we're talking over here only an Isra Dirabanan, therefore we can be maple. Suffolk Dirabanan Lakola. And the fact that it's Ochel Nefesh is neither here nor there. I mean, they're set. So one thing is also actually, well, so one thing we're talking about is, the Rishonim explain, this whole discussion is only talking about if you're carrying it through the Shusar Rabbi, or the Alter Rebbe adds also any other area like a timeless that you wouldn't be allowed to carry on Yom Tov. If you're sending it in Rosh HaYachid, like from one chotzer to another, then you'd be allowed to, even with Shloish Bnei Adam, that are all carrying the same thing, etc. Because then it's not really a malacha that you're talking about anyway. It's not a malacha Eichel Nefesh that you need to be matter. Then it would be fine to send as many people as you want carrying the gift. But if you're going through Rosh Hashanah, no Karmelis, that's when you have the rules over here. But even then, we're going to say that because the Gemara left it as teiku, therefore we can be makel. Okay, we said Reb Shimon Matir B'Tur, Reb Shimon allows you to send raw grain. So Tanya, Reb Shimon Matir B'Tur, if you're going Chitin Lasis Mehan Ludius, for example, he says you could send wheat because you could make Ludius out of it. So Rashi just says Ludius is Maicho Chitin, some kind of food made out of wheat. The Oruch defines it as something more like kind of like trail mix. He says you take the wheat and you mix it together with pomegranate seeds and other things. He says, and then he says, so he says you eat it as a dessert at the end of the meal. So again, based on Rashi, we were saying that apparently the idea would be that so that's actually, the Aruch also mentioned that you cook it, I think. He mentioned you cook the wheat, and then you mix it with pomegranate seeds or whatever, and make something like trail mix. So according to Rashi, we're saying, again, the wheat has to be pounded for that purpose, and then you cook it, and then again, you know, we had the discussion that we just said about how you're using a machteshes for that purpose on Yom Tov. That's where the Tzlach says that maybe in fact it didn't have to be pounded at all, just cooked. And then in that case, then there's nothing to talk about with the machteshes in the first place. Or Rav Shimon says, similarly, Sa'orim, Litzim, Lefem, Behemdoi. You can send a person raw barley, because he can give it to his animal food. Adoshim lasses man resisin. Similarly, you can send him lentils because he doesn't need to grind them up or anything. He can make resisin out of them, which is some kind of food that you make out of whole lentils, like lentil soup or something. So therefore, Rav Shimon says there's no problem sending those things as well, whereas the Chachamim disagree with pastors because they hold that those are not the usual things you would use those for. Mishnah continues on the subject of things that you're allowed to send on Yom Tov. Now, besides food that we talked about in the previous Mishnah, Meshalchin Kalin, you're also allowed on Yom Tov to send somebody clothing, Ben Tfurin, Ben Shein, and Tfurin, whether they're sewn or whether it's still the pieces which haven't been sewn together yet. Because, as the Gemara is going to point out, even the pieces that are not sewn together, you can use as a makeshift thing to cover yourself with. You're allowed to send these pieces even if they're made of shatnez, and we're going to discuss in the Gemara how that is. How is he allowed to be wearing or covering himself with shatnez? We'll see about that. Provided these are things that can be used during Yom Tov. Have a lois sandal, I'm a sumer, but you're not allowed to send a sandal, a hobnailed sandal that has nails sticking out of the bottom of it. So the Mishnah in Shabbos tells us you're not allowed to wear such a sandal on Shabbos, and here we're going to say Yom Tov as well, because Maisa Shehoyah, we'll talk about tomorrow, about a tragedy that happened involving sandal on the Sumer. So therefore, the Chachamim, and that happened on Shabbos, so therefore the Chachamim banned wearing a sandal on the Sumer on Shabbos or on Yom Tov. So therefore, there's no need for it for Yom Tov. It's not something that they can use on Yom Tov. Actually, an interesting point is that this that we're saying that you're not allowed to wear it on Shabbos because the original story involving them where Jews got killed happened on Shabbos, the Yerushalmi has an interesting take on it. Really, the Chachamim would have liked to ban them on weekdays as well. The problem is that would be Gzeidah Shein Rei Vatzibu Yechol Lamed Ba, because nobody would pay attention. That was a normal kind of footwear that they had in those days with sandal on the sofa. So what did the Chachamim do? The Chachamim sort of played a trick over here. In those times, people didn't regularly have different shoes for Shabbos and for weekdays like we do. They wore the same shoes throughout the whole week. So what do the Chachamim do? They say you can't wear these on Shabbos. Automatically, when a person is going to buy a pair of shoes, he's going to think to himself, so why would I buy a sandal on the summer? Then I'm not going to be able to wear it on Shabbos. So automatically, that way, they end up not wearing them during the week as well without the Chachamim having to be gozer that explicitly. The Yerushalmi brings this thing. It could also, the Bavli doesn't bring it. It could also be maybe that's one of those things that was different in Eretz Yisrael and in Bavel. Maybe in Bavel they did have separate Shabbos shoes, so that reason wouldn't make sense to them. I don't know. Anyway, so you're not allowed to send a sandal on the Sumer because since he can't wear it on Yom Tov because of this Maisa Shehoya where Jews were killed through them, then therefore we don't want it. It's not something that he can use on Yom Tov. We learned about this in Shabbos, actually. So that was like a year ago. But yeah. You're also not allowed to send on Yom Tov a shoe that hasn't been sewn together. So we said you're allowed to send pieces of clothing that haven't been sewn because you can use the pieces, but the pieces of a shoe you don't really have any use for, so therefore it's not something that you can send on Yom Tov, and obviously they can't sew it together on Yom Tov. Rabbi Yehuda says you're also not allowed to send a white, an undyed shoe, because it needs a craftsman to blacken it. In those times, nobody wore white shoes. An interesting thing that's brought in this connection as a side thing is Rabbi Tam brings in Sefer Ayosher, that Amar brings in Shulchan Aruch, that a chalitza shoe has to be dyed. It can't be the natural white color, because like we're saying over here, such a shoe is not worn, and you have to have a chalitza shoe. It has to be something that the Yavam would be able to wear. The general rule is, anything that you can beautify yourself with on Yom Tov, you're allowed to send it. Now, we're going to learn the Gemara tomorrow, actually. It doesn't mean that it has to be something that can be used on Yom Tov itself. It can be something that you have hanah from on Yom Tov, that you received it, even though you're not going to actually use it on Yom Tov. The Gemara is going to give an example of tefillin. You can't. You don't wear tefillin on Yom Tov. But nevertheless, you're allowed to send somebody a gift of tefillin on Yom Tov because he has hanah from that. You have hanah that you're sending it, and he has hanah that he's receiving it. It's not. Well, the mukta in the sense that you can't move them l'sorach makoyma or whatever. But here, you're sending them as a gift. Then you're allowed to. Yeah. We'll talk about that in the Gemara tomorrow, Bas Hashem. Okay. So the Gemara says, "Bishlemet furin chazul malmish." I understand why you're allowed to send a person clothing that's sewn together because he can wear them on Yom Tov. I can understand why you can send him the pieces of the clothing, because fine, he can cover himself with the pieces. What is he going to use kilayim? What is he going to use shatness for?
Not to wear it.
You're going to say he can fold it up and use it, and then use it as a cushion to sit on. But no, V'hatanya, we learn in a brisa, the pasuk says lo yala alacha. The pasuk says you're not allowed to have kilayim go up on you, in other words, to wear it as clothing. Aval ata yochal atzia tatecha, on a derisa level, you would be allowed to put it underneath you as a cushion. Aval omru chachamim also lasis came, but the chachamim said you're not allowed to do that. Shemet korech lenima al basari, because a thread might wrap around from it over his skin. So Rashi describes, we don't just mean a thin thread. Rashi describes, you have like these blankets that have these thick fringes on the end of them. So if you're sitting on a blanket, let's say of shatnez, and one of those things wraps around, it really does warm you up. Or Rashi says another possibility is that it could even mean a thin thread. Hey, Yosef, that the main garment is warming you up from the bottom, then therefore, so on a daraisa level, that itself wouldn't be a problem. But the Chacham was saying, if even a tiny thread of it wraps around and ends up on top of you, then it comes out that altogether the beggar is giving you hana, and therefore it would be also. So you're not allowed to use it as a cushion either. So you're going to say, okay, well, maybe what you do is you put something else in between. You put the shatnez down, then you put something else on top of it, and then you sit on it. So that way, the shatnez is nowhere near you. No, but in the name of the holy congregation in Yerushalayim. Even if you have 10 cushions, one on top of the other, the kilayim tachtehen and kilayim underneath them, also lishan aleim, you're not allowed to sleep on them, mishum shenema lo yala alacha, because of this pasuk, lo yala alacha. Almost like tumah, in a way, yeah. So that, in other words, the idea is that you have, it's still midrabbanon, yeah, there's no reason, because, it almost sounds like a gzeira l'gzeira. So actually, one of the Rishonim said, I think the Ritva says, this is an example where we say kulu chod gzeira. He when the Chachamim made the gzeira not to use it, then they included everything at the same time. That you're not allowed to have it directly underneath you, and not even if there are other cushions in the way. So you're not allowed to use it. So what are you sending him shatnez for? What is he going to use it on? What is he going to use it on Yom Kippur for? Elab is viloin. So you're going to answer. Maybe you're sending it to him, and he can use it as a curtain. You can use it as a door curtain or something. No, Ula says, no, you should know, why is a curtain makabel tumah? We have in Shlosha Trisin hand, in the Mishnayos, we have it with a Shlosha Sedin in hand, and one of them is a Levila in Tomei Tmemes. So why is a villa in makabel tumah? On the face of it, it should be like any wall or door of the house and not be makabel tumah. The reason is, because a waiter sometimes warms himself up with it. He wraps himself in the edges of it and then warms himself up. So therefore, it's considered a begging. Now, so once that's done, then in that case, so you can't make it a kilayim for that reason. Because now if a waiter or a butler or whatever goes and wraps himself in it, you're going to cause him to be over on the issue of kilayim. Tosfos actually says, though, it seems hard to understand. Tosfos says, we really don't find any place explicitly that you shouldn't be allowed to make it out of kilayim. That it's makabel tumah, fine, that's what we're saying in the Gemara over here. But where do we actually see that you shouldn't be allowed to make a vilain out of kilayim? Nevertheless, though, that seems to be what the Gemara is saying. And in fact, that's how it's passing in Shulchan Aruch. So Ella Bekashin. So the Gemara continues, evidently Bekashin. Evidently, we have to be talking about that we're talking about very stiff clothing, very stiff pieces of cloth, that therefore you'd be allowed to sit on them. Those are not going to warm you up. So that would be the case. In other words, you're allowed to send a stiff piece of shatnez felt, let's say, which is stiff, and therefore it's not going to warm them up. as we have the example of what Ravuna Breja Rishua said, Hai Namta Gamta Denerash Sharia, the Namta, which is felt, Gamda, Gamda literally means shrunken. Rashi explained that it also means hard, because when something shrinks, it gets hard. So it's shrunken or hardened felt from Neresh, is the name of a place in Babel. Sharia, such a thing, you're allowed to sit on it, because it doesn't warm you up because it's stiff. Tosfos has a long discussion about the pros and cons of this. First of all, we learned actually fairly recently in Yuma, the Gemara talked about that the big dick kahuna, caution him, that the big dick kahuna are stiff like that, and therefore to a certain extent, the dinim of kalayim don't apply, that therefore talk about that you'd be allowed to use, you'd be allowed to put it under your head as a pillow, because that doesn't warm you up. But also Tosfos discusses that, now you have, although the word shatnez itself stands for shua, Tovui v'nuz. Shua means that the materials are pressed and felted together. Tovui means they spin them together, and nuz means that they weave them together. So it's machlokas rishonim. Is it that any one of those things is enough by itself to make it also daraisa, or is it only if all three things are done is it also daraisa? Otherwise, it's only dirabana. So Tosfos discusses all Gemara, maybe following the opinion that if it's only one, then it's only Dirabbanan anyway. So if it was Shua and Tavri and Nuz, then it wouldn't matter the fact that it's hard, it would still be considered Kalayim. But over here, we're talking about felt. Only felting, only Shua has been done. There's no Tavri and there's no Nuz. Therefore, anyway, it's only also Dirabbanan. And therefore, if it's hard, then we're going to allow it. And the Gemara continues on this topic. I'm going to pop her. Audulin and Behemishum Kilayim. There's no issue of Kilayim with Audulin. So Rashi describes these are like overshoes or galoshes. And in modern Hebrew, in fact, they use the word Audulayim to mean galoshes. Like the nowadays they make them out of rubber, but nowadays they make those rubber overshoes. But in those times, they didn't have rubber, right? So Rashi describes that the main part of it would be made out of goat skin, and then by the heel you would have a woolen part, just to help cushion your foot. Rashi uses the expression tachas min aleihem, right? Tachas min aleihem, under. So does that mean under as an outside of the shoe, or does it mean inside the shoe, like underneath it? Well, yeah, it's a good point. Yeah. Whatever the case, the Papa says in behem mishum kilayim, there's no issue of kilayim with them. So Rashi says because they're stiff. The Rambam gives a different reason because we're talking about the wool is by the heel area. Your heel is very insensitive anyway. We know in Chassidus it talks about b'hoya akev tishmo, and that even your akev is going to listen to Elikus, and that the akev is a symbol of Kabbalah so because it does whatever you tell it to. So it itself is insensitive and therefore it doesn't feel the warmth like other parts of the body would. So therefore, there's no issue of kalayim. Yeah, based on that, maybe a taka is more like socks. Yeah, I mean, I guess the truth is, yeah, where you wouldn't put wool on the outside of it, then it would get all wet and soggy. So yeah, you're probably right that it is that Rashi and the Rambam are understanding Audulim to be more like socks. Yeah. I guess the question would be then, in that case, why is Rashi saying most of it is made out of goat skin? That doesn't sound very comfortable as socks, based on this. Okay.
Don't say the water was made out of
goatskin. In a chanamah, but then why would you wear socks made out of leather? And then in any case, you'd use it. So maybe that's what it is. Maybe the heel is stuffed inside with wool, yeah. And then the outside of it is made out of goatskin. Could be. Anyway. Rava says, here's another thing, a bag that you put money in, there's no issue of kilayim. Because once you put the coins in it, it becomes hard, it becomes stiff. So therefore, again, there's no problem that you're warming yourself up while you're handling it. You're allowed to put it in your lap, for example. On the other hand, the kind of one that you put seeds in, yesh ben mishum kilayim, then kilayim would apply to it because it's still soft. So therefore, you're going to feel warmth on yourself when you hold in your lap. Rav Ashi says either way, there's no issue of kilayim. Because that's not the normal way of warming yourself. So therefore, that's not an issue. So in other words, the issue of kilayim is the normal kinds of ways that you'd wear something or have something underneath you or whatever, but not like this, where you have a bag that happens to be made out of kilayim and you're carrying it. And that's the halacha.
The money bag you're allowed to carry only if it has money in it.
Right, I guess that's true. And then the seed one also only if it has seeds in it. Yeah, it's true. Well, because if not, then it's soft, and then you're back to the problem of reliance. The rubber is saying the only reason we're allowing one with coins is it's hard, and he's saying therefore the seeds one is not even hard, and therefore you wouldn't be allowed to. And Rav Ashi is saying fine, and derech chimum b'kach. But Rav Ashi, Rav Ashi would agree that if it's empty, then you have a problem with reliance. Yeah.
Okay. A very interesting line in the question on the dollar. The last one is basically about grinding.
A person is machmer to grind a lot of spices erev yom tov rather than using these shinuyim or anything that we're talking about over here. Yisbarach belekim of a shem amiyuchad. Tosfos says you should be benched by the Eibishtein with the shem amiyuchad. Yeah. By the way, one other thing I forgot to mention also when we were talking about how it is that you're sending, say, according to the Shimon, you're sending somebody to Ruah, and don't you have the problem that we said that you'd have to grind it according to Rashi, and how are you allowed to grind it if we said before the Chassam Sofer, besides the answers that we mentioned before, such as the Slach that doesn't need grinding anyway, or that he's talking to Bnei Bavel, the Chassam Sofer gives a different explanation. He says, look, this that you're saying you're not allowed to use a Machteshes is because you could have done it before Yom Tov. But here you're receiving it as a gift on Yom Tov. You didn't know before Yom Tov you're going to receive it. So therefore, you should be allowed to use a Machteshes, at least a Machteshes Kana, even on Yom Tov.
The sender has to know.
The sender maybe should know and should have done that.
That would be
right. That's also true, but yeah. No, because we're talking about Meshalchin. We're talking about what you're allowed to send. The dinim mitzad, the recipient, that we're going to talk about in a later parak, mitzad, for example, Seder or other malachas that may have been done with it on Yom Tov. No, here we're talking about from the point of view of the sender who's a yid.
That people that have a million, you invite somebody to shop, they bring the bottle, right?
So Lachora, based on this, it seems like you would be allowed to use that wine because again, it's Yenis Shemona Muslosis. You're allowed to give gifts on Yom Tov. We're talking about for Shabbos.
Well, so
on Shabbos, actually, that would be a different matter. Yeah, they might have to be mezaket to you before Shabbos. Yeah, that's actually not so simple. That's true. Yeah.
Oh wow!
Yeah.
After
Shabbos, you can use it. First of all, they didn't do any malacha to bring it. There's an eruv, like your father said, and then I mean, I think maybe another possibility is you have them make kiddush on that wine themselves, and then fine, they brought it for themselves. Yeah.